This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. We're talking about a recent real-life message-in-a-bottle story. Dr. Warren Joyce of Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans is the person who found the bottle. Lonnie Lipsett, managing editor of Oceanus magazine at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, is the person who fielded the story on this end of things. Peter Bumpus is Dean Bumpus's son, the son of the man who put these bottles into the ocean. And Dr. Pell Robbins is a physical oceanographer here at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Now, Warren Joyce, I gather that, Sable Island is this small, very sandy island off the coast of Nova Scotia. The dunes there are constantly moving. And I gather you've said that things tend to appear and disappear in and out of those dunes on a regular basis. Was it a surprise to you to find a bottle like this, or did that just seem par for the course when you're out on Sable Island?
Well, it seemed about par for the course. I mean, I've been going out there for about 10 years now. And like I said, constantly... the winds shift or change the features of the island. And you see different artifacts come in and out of the dunes at times. So, like, for example, there used to be a number of life-saving stations out there, little stations that were set up to rescue anyone who got shipwrecked on the island. And every now and then you see remnants of those stations coming out of the dunes as sand blows away, like old pots or stoves or things like that. So, I mean, it's quite possible to find things that are quite old, just depending on being in the right place at the right time, which I think was the case where I found this bottle.
Now, Pell Robbins, we've been talking a lot about the kind of mystery and intrigue that these bottles inspire, but of course this was a scientific program at its heart. What kind of things did we actually learn from putting drifters, these early drifters, into the ocean, and are we still able to learn anything when we hear about the discovery of one of these bottles?
Well, Dean Bumpus did write several papers based on this type of data, mostly about circulation of the coastal oceanography from New England down to Cape Hatteras. That's where the bottles were most helpful because that's where people found them. Today, we use different technology because of advances in electronics and satellite location. We put out the equivalent of bottles, but now they carry circuitry so that they know where they are at sea and they can report that back to us via satellite.
So we're still doing the same kind of research, just with technological advances to our...
Sure, the spirit of the research is kind of a direct descendant of the drifter in the bottle, but now we just make the bottle smarter.
Now, in terms of this, bottle just being found on Sable Island, I think the thinking has been that it probably hit Sable Island a long time ago and has been buried in the dunes, but is there a chance that it's actually been floating around and hit Sable Island recently?
I would say a small chance. I mean, we can't rule it out, but it's most likely it landed there several decades ago and was buried in the sand. And that is one of the problems with this type of method, is that you know where the bottle goes in and you know when it goes in, but you don't really know when it washes up on shore. You need a beachcomber to come along and find it, and that could be the next day or it could be several decades later.
Now, Lonnie, how many of these bottles were actually returned or reported returned? It was actually a fairly small fraction, wasn't it?
10%, according to Dave Sherman in the Woods Hole Oceanographic Archives. Dean Bumpus also put out these other things. There were sort of these mushroom-shaped yellow things that would go down to the bottom of the ocean, I guess, and try to attract the deep currents as well. And for some reason, the return rate on those is a little higher, 19%. Of those. So if 300,000 went in, about 30,000 have come out. And if you go to the archives, there are boxes and boxes and boxes filled with these postcards that have been returned to Woods Hole over the years that Dave is archiving.
Now, Pell Robbins, 90% of these bottles never got at least reported returned based on the kinds of responses that people send back when they get them. It seems like most people that are finding them are probably interested enough to get in touch. So do we have any sense of where that other 90%, hundreds of thousands of bottles ended up, where they might be?
Well, some of them are probably on the ocean floor. One of the things that happens if you put a bottle out in the ocean is barnacles grow on it and other things grow on it, and that would weight it down over time and they might sink. Others, if the cork wasn't quite secure over several years, might degrade and let water in. all sorts of things could happen to them. Certainly some could have washed up on rocky beaches and broken and not been discovered for that reason.
So probably just mishaps. They're probably not entrained in some current that they'll pop up again in 50 years, some other place on the other
not,
side.
Not over those time scales, I wouldn't think. I mean, I would think the life would be up to 5 or 10 years maybe, but beyond that, it would couldn't rule it out, but I think it would be unusual.
And that's because you're saying just because the bottle would get too heavy and would sink, not necessarily because there, I mean, are, there are currents going around the planet that, that do essentially have these 50-year lifespans, right?
Yes, certainly so. I think it's more the hazards of being a bottle floating at the surface and things that can happen to it over time.
So talk about some of the modern versions of drifters and what we're learning from those now. I mean, how good at we actually talked with Dr. Bob Pickard a couple of months ago mm-hmm. about his work confirming the discovery of a new ocean current. And I think the idea that we are still finding ocean currents is kind of shocking. It seems like perhaps we should know that about the ocean. But what are we learning from these drifters that are floating around today?
Well, we're getting better global pictures of the ocean currents. The program I work with is called the Argo Float Program, and we have floats that, rather than drifting at the surface, they're designed to submerge and dive to about 1,000 meters in the ocean and drift at that depth and periodically come up and report. And those are distributed globally, so it's one of the first global observation systems that returns data about the temperature and salinity of the ocean on those scales. So we're especially in the Southern Ocean, those are places where ships tend not to go. So having autonomous instruments out there that report on their own are providing data in places that we seldom get to and providing data now year-round when often if you depended on a ship to go out there, the ships like to go out when the weather is nice and we don't get so many measurements when the weather is bad or in the wintertime. So the newer autonomous instruments give us year-round coverage of a lot of oceanographic phenomena.
So what would you say is Dean Bumpus's scientific legacy? I mean, was this kind of a pioneering idea at the time that he was doing it, or is it a legacy of the information that was learned from these bottles?
I think part of it is the massive effort he put into it to demonstrate that if you really want to get a return of a decent amount of information, you have to put a lot of instruments out there. Bumpus was not the first person to do this. There are reports going back to the Greeks of putting the similar messages in bottles. And the Prince of Monaco, Albert I, in the 1800s, put out 100,000 bottles, maybe 100, not 100, tens of thousands of bottles. He was very interested in oceanography. So people were doing this before Bumpus's time. But he really did it on a bigger scale than anybody had done before.
Now, Lonnie, talk about this perhaps in terms of institutional legacy. And, you know, this was still fairly early, you know, Dean Bumpus was here from, 1937, from some of the early days of the Oceanographic Institution. And as Peter Bumpus mentioned, working with the Navy, this is kind of the early days of the institution, and I guess the history of the institution, how things got started.
Well, when I think about those days, I think about a time when things were completely wide open. Almost nothing was known about the ocean, either about the water or about the seafloor or what was underneath the seafloor. And Woods Hole was, you know, one of the first institutions that, you know, really went out there and tried to find out about that. It had the first sort of dedicated national ocean-going ship to do that, the Atlantis, which allowed that. But so many people came to Woods Hole in that time because it was the opportunity to, you know, for the first time, actually get out there and find things.
Now, Peter Bumpus, you know, this was, as we've said, clearly your father's passion. I guess in terms of your family and being a part of Woods Hole, do you feel like this is that you have kind of an ongoing connection to the oceanographic through your father's research and through this kind of slow trickle of bottles that still sometimes get found?
I don't see how I could avoid it. I grew up in Woods Hole and in the institution as a science brat from the time I was a tiny child. I've been on the as a young person on the oceanographic ships. And the family has simply been a participant with the oceanographic over low these many years. My father, when he came to work in 1937, the oceanographic had been summer only. Before that, he was one of the first three full-time year-round employees in the institution. And so, you know, we were almost married to the institution.
Now, do you ever end up forming a personal relationship with some of the people who have found these bottles, who write to you wanting to know more about the program, wanting to know more about your father and his research?
I have contact with people like that from time to time. It hasn't resulted in forming any relationships. People generally want to know what and where and when and how and what this was all about. I think that most of those requests initially go right to the institution, and only occasionally go further than that. But I remain interested in it, and people around the world, when they find these, remain interested in it. And I would have to say that because of changes in beach and sand and things disappearing into the sand and coming out, that this is unlikely to be the last bottle to be found. I would not be at all surprised as the years go by if a few more turned up.
Now, Warren Joyce, did you get directly in touch with Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, or did you also get in touch with Dean Bumpus's family?
I did originally just email the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and it was just, a blind email to the Physical Oceanography Department, and that was when Pell responded to me. And then after that, I got in contact with Catherine Bumpus and then later Peter as well. So.
And I gather that Catherine was not entirely sure that Huey would make good on its promise and promised you a drink perhaps when you were next in Woods Hole. Do you plan to now come to Woods Hole?
I'm not sure if my work takes me there or if I happen to get away for a vacation. At some point I might try and hook up with these people, yes, but in the future I don't see that as a possibility just because we have young kids at home. It's kind of hard to travel every now. So.
Yeah. Well, do you have any plans for your 50-cent reward that you were sent?
Actually, it was a bit of a sad story. When I did receive the envelope with the reward, it looked like someone might have cut the envelope and removed the coin. So.
That is indeed sad.
So, Warren, I was going to send you a check, but I figured that you'd have a difficulty cashing that in Canada. So that's why I sent the 50-cent people. We'll make good. Don't worry about it. My colleague said that, you know, I really should give you something like $4.38 with inflation. So,
well, that might actually get you, you know, to be able to buy your own beer even up there in Canada. 50 cents, yeah. I'm not sure, would get you very far toward that.
No, 50 cents doesn't buy a lot these days. But as I said before, the reward is, or the biggest reward is just finding out the history and knowing that, or I guess finding the bottle itself and just, yeah, hearing about the history of it.
Pell, I want you to talk a little bit more about some of the different directions that Drifter Research has kind of taken. You said you're personally involved in the Argo project. And, I mean, this is, again, a massive project that, in and of itself, has taken another step towards, you know, if Dean Bumpus's was the largest in scale at his time, this is really massive global watching, observing of the ocean through these drifters.
Yeah, the Argo project is a pretty large project. We are constrained by the technology and what we are able to do because of that. There are other types of drifters out there in addition to the Argo floats. There are some that drift solely at the surface like a bottle would, but now contain instruments to measure ocean temperature and barometric pressure and might have a GPS receiver on it so they know where they are, and they also report back via satellite. So there's several branches, really, of different programs in the spirit of releasing something into the ocean and letting it drift with the currents and then tracking that in some way. It's also done with subsurface floats using acoustics, since sound waves travel very well through the ocean. There is a class of neutrally buoyant floats that descend to a certain depth and then are tracked using sound waves to locate their positions. So there's several different branches, all kind of exploring different or utilizing different types of technology to understand the best we can of this basic idea of, if you put something in the ocean, where does it go, and how do you know that? How do you get that information back so that you can analyze it?
If we take a step back, I mean, there's certainly an element of just general interest in our planet. How does the ocean move? Where do these currents go? But what do we gain in a broader sense by understanding ocean currents?
Well, ocean currents are the prime movers of stuff in the ocean. The ocean currents move the heat around the planet along with the atmosphere. They are one of the primary modes of the way the planet takes the heat that signs on the tropics and distributes it to the higher latitudes. In addition to heat, they move around all the nutrients and the carbon in the ocean. So trying to understand the budget of how the ocean fits into kind of this planetary system, having knowledge of the currents is one of the essential, first building blocks of making those kinds of analyses.
Now, Lonnie, this program of Dean Bumpus's, as we've said, kind of, it was scientific, it was groundbreaking in a scientific way, but it was also engaging people's passion and imagination. And this was all before, now scientists are required. When they write a grant for funding, they have to have something incorporated in there about how they're going to reach out to the public to explain this science or involve the public in some way. This predated that. But in some ways, I wonder if, it was a period, the product of an era where there was a little bit more romanticism about this. And if you think that projects like this are still possible, of this scale and this scope and involving the public in this way in ocean science?
Well, I think that trying to understand the ocean is a heroic endeavor. I think that's why it engages the public. I think of another line from my poetry class, a man's reach must exceed his grasp. Now, trying to grasp the ocean and how it works and all its detail is heroic. And, Dean Bumpus tried to do that and got a little ways. And we still have so much to learn about the ocean, and it's still an heroic endeavor.
Pell, is there any role for the public in some of the current drifter research? Is there any aspect of find and return, or are these pretty much autonomous out there doing their own thing and reporting back without any help?
Most of the ones I'm familiar with are autonomous, that don't have a loop for somebody actually finding a postcard and mailing it back. There might be such a program, but I'm not familiar with it.
All right. We have been talking about Dean Bumpus's drifter bottles, 300,000 empty bottles that were filled with messages and requests for information about where those bottles turned up and then released into the ocean over 16 years between 1956 and 1972. One of them recently turned up on Sable Island off the coast of Nova Scotia. You can find photos of the bottle and the message that was inside it, as well as some more information about some of the letters that Dean Bumpus's family has gotten over the years on our website, capeandislands.org. I've been talking with Dr. Pell Robbins of the Physical Oceanography Department here at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, Lonnie Lipsett, Managing Editor of Oceanus Magazine at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, also Dr. Warren Joyce of Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans, the person who found that recent bottle, and Peter Bumpus, Dean Bumpus's son. Thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll transition to another real-life story of exploration of the planet and talk about the Scott Expedition, an attempt to trek to the South Pole and back without any support. Stay with us.